Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, listeners, and welcome to the radio show, Three Women, Three Ways. I'm excited to be here this morning with you, and it is Saturday morning, and I hope you're wide-eyed and bushy-tailed. So my name is Deborah Adams, and I'm one of the Three Divas. Three Divas LLC is the company that brainstormed and developed this wonderful show. The show named Three Women, Three Ways. And the three of us would get together and have discussions and share our points of view. And they were often so varied and funny, yet similar in many ways that we thought, I feel like we always went away from those conversations and the times we spent together learning something. And we thought that would be a great format to bring to you, to talk about current events relating to politics and issues and news going on around the world. So welcome to Three Women, Three Ways. I'm Deborah Adams. I am an advocate, first and foremost. I have been doing my career work of anti-violence against women for about 20 years. And during that time, I also returned to college. And I got myself promoted from a volunteer at a community-based domestic violence program up to director of the program over those years. And so you can tell I've been on quite a journey. So my studies were related to gender, culture, and history, and always was focused on a way to look for reasons why we have this phenomenon in our society called domestic violence and violence against women. So, and along the way, I've met some fantastic people and some very educated and some very eloquent and very compassionate people. And they have indeed motivated me and spurred me to learn even more. So thank you for joining us. We'd like to invite you to call into our show if you have a thought or a comment. And our call-in number for guests is 646-378-0430. So call in anytime if you'd like to join the conversation today. Also, if you'd like to learn more about the Three Divas and our Three Women, Three Ways shows, please go to our website. Our website is www.threewomenthreeways.com. And there you will see our bios and you will see some of the other things we're doing and that we're interested in. And you'll get to know us a little better, and we'd invite you to do that. We'd like to get to know you better, too. Today, our topic is natural disasters and violence against women. And I'm thinking you're probably pondering the question, like, what does one have to do with the other? And that's what we're going to talk about today. So I know, and as you know, that our friends and family on the East Coast of the United States have been plagued by the Hurricane Sandy and its aftermath. And also, on top of that, they had what they call a nor'eastern winter storm, that both of those natural disasters had a wide berth of impact. From Florida all the way up to Canada, and from the Atlantic coast all the way to Ohio. And that's a pretty wide area of people to be impacted. You know, it's probably about one-third of the United States population, if you want to look at it that way. And what we know is that some of them are still without power. Many lost their homes. Many have not been able to work. And kids are not able to go to school. So these are major, major impacts on our common daily lives in the United States. We definitely rely on power, our electricity, for almost everything we do. we definitely rely on our schools for safe place for our children where they can learn both educationally, academically, socially, and culturally. We definitely rely on our workplaces to provide a safe place for us to work and, you know, do that exchange of our work in return for a paycheck. So those are definite things that we definitely, I think, often take for granted. And when we are faced with the devastation that we have had that has impacted us in this last few weeks, it makes us stop and think. And I am one that believes firmly in the mantra of to be prepared. You know, it's better to be prepared for the worst than left trying to figure it out after it happens. But often we're not prepared for the worst, and that's because we're not thinking about it ahead of time, or we're thinking, I mean, who would have thought that a hurricane would have the impact it's had on, you know, some of our Midwestern states. That's not common that they have hurricane impact, or it's not even common that they have northeastern storms that come down from the top of Canada all the way down to the United States. So these are natural disasters, and we do not always have, you know, complete preparation for them. So we're going to share some of those preparations too, and some resources. First, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about why we're connecting gender, you know, natural disasters in a gendered way. And I have to say that when I was a student at the University of Colorado through the School of Public Affairs, the Graduate School of Public Affairs, in their Center for Domestic Violence, they invited an expert named Dr. Elaine Anderson to come and do our day of, we always have one day of a national expert come and talk to us about things connected to violence against women. And she is one of the United States' leading people in disaster work and the aftermath that occurs. She has written a couple of books. She is a prolific writer in articles and in our journals, and she has done so much research, and I think she may be one of the first people called upon when people want to learn more about emergency management and in an effort to be prepared ahead of time rather than worrying, you know, trying to catch up afterwards. So Elaine Anderson works at the University of Colorado, and she was a lead course developer of FEMA's Social Vulnerability course, and she herself initiated the Gender and Disaster Sourcebook Project. So she's also a founder of an alliance called Gender and Disaster Reliance. So first I'd like to share, if you want to learn more about Elaine Anderson, she was invited today, and she would have loved to have been here. She's pretty passionate about this subject. You can reach her by email at enarsone@gmail.com. You can Google her or put her name in your search engine. It's Elaine, last name Enarson, and you will be able to find her bio and lists of things that works that she has contributed to. She's pretty. And on top of that, she's a really nice woman. So I've met with her a few times and had lots of conversations. And, of course, she spiked my interest in this topic of natural disasters and violence against women. So she is currently working this week and weekend in a location that has limited or perhaps no internet service, or she would have been here. So I want you to know we've invited her back, and she will be talking with us at some point on this show. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the two networks that I mentioned, the Gender and Disaster Network, and that website is www.gdnonline.org, and that's the Gender and Disaster Network. And this is a source book of incredible resources for you. Talks about who we are, what the resources, it's organized by regions, talking about what's next, and there is just a wealth of information on this. And you can sign up to be on the mailing list and get their information. And it's really helpful. You know, our government is very supportive of organizing around emergency management issues. So there's a lot of government-type NGOs, if you will, that are willing to work with people to get you prepared ahead of time for natural disasters as well as support you during natural disasters. So that's an important resource that I wanted to tell you. The Gender and Disaster Network was started in 1997, and it was started as an educational project. And this was actually the first web presence to advocate for gender mainstreaming and disaster risk reduction using the internet. And I think it's kind of cool that it came out of a graduate school student's intentions and studies. So please be sure to check that out. It's a really great resource. And I want to invite you to call in if you have anything you'd like to share, if there's anything that you would like to bring into this discussion, that would be wonderful. So I'm here if you're willing to talk. So one of the actual articles that I was able to work with Elaine Anderson on describing the, some of the impacts of the natural disasters on, including violence against women, we published an article called Hard-Won Lessons, Responding to Women's Interests and Needs in the Gulf Coast Oil Spill. You remember that. That was not very long ago that we had this horrific oil spill in the Gulf, and it impacted multitudes of people as far as their livelihood in fishing. And also, it was devastating not too long after Hurricane Katrina. So these were two things, one on top of the other, natural disasters that worked to create a very devastating impact on the community. Not only the community that is directly impacted, but also the friends and families and the world at large were impacted by all these things. So the gender dimensions of disaster response and recovery are often overlooked, and that we need to recognize that it raises the risk of women and children to be exposed to violence. And the Gender and Disaster Resilience Alliance has developed a proactive guideline for shaping the national response, and it builds on women's past experience. Elaine Anderson herself has been the lead researcher in many studies on the subject about the impact on the lives of women and men, boys and girls, and how their lives are transformed by these disasters. So let's use that knowledge that has been gained. Let's honor their experience, and let's use their best thinking and best practices to get us prepared for the future. So just to let you know, she's got some points. She says, listen to women, seek them out, and bring them together. Number two is communicate directly with women and the men who are impacted by the natural disaster. Use media to reach different groups and ensure that the messages reflect their everyday life and reality. And that's important because we get caught up in the governmental response, and our politicians talk about how we're going to resolve these things, that we often lose sight of the people that were most directly impacted. So I think it's important, too, her third point is make space for women to fully and meaningfully participate. You know, support grassroots organizations and target communities that are impacted. I see we have a caller. Let's see what they would like to share with us. Hello, caller. Are you there? Caller, are you there?
This is OP. How's it going?
Fine. What's up with you today?
I was just wondering why you think that you're superior because you have a vagina.
Okay. Thank you. Hey, I think my heckler's back. We will just see, do our best not to talk to you anymore, OP, but thanks for calling in. Oh my gosh. You gotta love the ability of people to interact and communicate on the internet, because it's pretty darn immediate and effective. So I was talking about supporting grassroots groups, and there again, this is groups of people that are not always evident in the media, and that there's often lots of local groups that have ideas and would need support in these times of crisis. We also need to look specifically at the economic relief, and this includes women. Whether their jobs are related to the industry that is, eliminated or devastated by a natural disaster or not, everybody's economic situation is going to be impacted. Also, we need to think about how to reduce violence against women. We need to help, your anti-violence organizations be prepared, such as having, the right amount of clean water and batteries and radios for contacts and things like that. We need to talk about the immediate impact to people's physical being, such as in Hurricane Sandy, when they were saying that, when the cars are turned over and the boats are, lifted and turned over, the impact of having gasoline and waste in the water and our people, our friends are walking, our family and friends are, either walking through this or working when they can get back to their residence, working in an area that's been contaminated by this sort of conglomerate mess of chemicals and the impact that it can have on us, not just now today, but also down the line. It can have a direct link to people's reproductive abilities and as well as, lead to forms of cancer. I mean, I was thinking of this, that in Vietnam, when our soldiers came back from the Vietnam War, that there was lot of our soldiers and our military people had a health condition, and they related it to what they called Agent Orange, and that I believe was in the gas and the firepower that they dropped on, that the Air Force was dropping on the fields of people during a battle. And if you were a military person on the ground in Vietnam for an extended period of time, you were probably exposed to that Agent Orange. And so they're doing many, many, many studies on the ongoing and long-lasting impact of Agent Orange. So I think that we need to be thinking about these types of things when we are hearing about our natural disasters. The impact of experiencing natural disasters is great. And it's not only the physical impact that we need to talk about, but it is also the emotional impact that we need to talk about. So anybody that has experienced flooding, In Nebraska, the Red River flooded. You know, in the Southwest and Midwest, there's lots of tornadoes that will just flatten towns and communities. And there are thunder and lightning storms. There are tsunamis. We've seen a great increase in these type of large-scale natural disasters. So I think we need to find a way to be prepared for that and to think about that ahead of time. So I spoke about some government resources, and I know that many of us have already heard of what is called FEMA, and that is a national government support. And they're actually available online as well. And they have developed a program called Ready, Prepare, Plan, Stay Informed. And you can get to that. There is a particular listserv going on of people across the United States that are working towards being informed what to do before, during, and after the emergency, making a plan, preparing, plan, and staying informed, and then how to build a kit to prepare, and how the next step is getting involved in your community and working with others so that the whole community can be involved. And then also plan for protecting businesses and involving businesses in this. And then they also have a link to information related to children. And that would be a good way to involve your children on a non-frightening level, right? So a few days ago, I received an email from them, and they wanted to talk about some of the things called rumor control. And says often there is misinformation going on lists, and their status may or may not be true. There's a message that's been circulating that says cash cards and food stamps are going to be impacted or are being distributed by the American Red Cross, and this is false as of November 5th. If you are a survivor in a declared county and have losses other than food, please apply for assistance online. And there's mobile. You can do it on your mobile device if you have one or over the phone. So the online assistance address is www.disasterassistance.gov. And or there's a phone number. It's an 800 phone number, 800-621, and the letters FEMA, which are 3362. So this is true. There is that assistance that you can apply either online or via the telephone. And if you need additional information about Red Cross services, they also have an 800 number. It's 800-RED-CROSS, or visit their website, which is www.redcross.org. Okay. Food stamps being given out in New York and New Jersey as a part of FEMA assistance. This is false. Okay, here's one, a rumor that's true. FEMA's Individuals and Households Program does not provide food assistance or a $300 voucher. If you have emergency need for food, please call 211. And so there's a lot of different things going on, and rumor control is a big issue, of course, with as how connected we all are via the Internet. Okay. There are some rumors about hiring. You need to verify those. Don't believe it if just one person talks to you. You need to actually find out for yourself. Okay. You know, part of the problem is there's, like, very limited shelter space or warming centers when you are impacted by a natural disaster that has killed the electricity and the power in your area. And so it's important to band together as a community and find those out for yourself, and then, you know, see what it is exactly that is available to you. And I know that the news reports have been filled with a lot of good resources as well as good stories about people and their communities. And, you know, talking about the devastation, imagine how you might feel, right? If this was your experience, if you're on the West Coast where we were not directly impacted, how would you feel? And building that empathy is really important because we need to have empathy and compassion for our friends and family that have been so impacted by Hurricane Sandy and the nor'eastern storm that followed so quickly. And I think, there's when people tell you that there's a hurricane and you need to leave your residence, I'm sure that I would feel like, really? I'm not leaving my residence. Are you kidding? Why do I have to leave my residence? And so, or thinking, well, I've lived through the last year when they warned us about Hurricane Irene, and it wasn't so bad. We weren't impacted, so I think I'll just stay here. And then to actually be, kind of in the eye of the storm, as so many people were, what a devastating and emotional, physical, spiritual experience that would be for you. You know, and think about yourself. What would be a comfort to you? As lots of communities are thinking, what can I do to help? I think it's been great that some of our radio stations and TV broadcasting businesses have been running, different events, trying to raise money. And different people are gathering needed supplies. And, you know, what are the needed supplies? Of course, it's food and water, the number one. Food and water, and then, of course, warm blankets and clothing because it's cold on the East Coast. And the nor'eastern storm really added, a different dimension to a hurricane story. Usually hurricanes are warm wind and lots of water. And then to be followed immediately or compounded by this nor'eastern storm, which is ice-cold air and snow and sleet and hail, freezing temperatures, that is like a double impact. It's really, really hard to imagine how we would feel if we were living through that experience today. If you'd like to call in, you can call our guest number, everybody except Opie. I don't want to talk to you, Opie. The number is 646-378-0430. Please call in and add your voice. So there's, I think that the thought that this impacts women and children in a way that's different from men. Men are definitely impacted, of course. They're going to lose their home. Probably their work, their economic support is going to be impacted. They're also impacted emotionally and spiritually. These are huge, huge things. And on top of that, when we think of it from a woman's perspective, that we need to include women's voice in this because women are often also impacted economically. If you're a stay-at-home working woman, you rely on the income generated by your partner, and if that's impacted, then you're impacted. There's also a need to include racial justice as well as gender justice. I had the opportunity to visit New Orleans 5 years after Hurricane Katrina, and I was amazed at the amount of work still needed to be done to restore people to their homes and how they were prior to Katrina. And I tell you, I was amazed. And I actually had I went for a work conference, and they actually organized a day of volunteer work to help Katrina survivors. And I took part in that. So we were actually bused to some of the nearby parishes that were, you know, like 80% of their community was destroyed by the hurricane. And we actually got an education. We worked with the St. Bernard Project, which is rebuilding homes. And they gave us a little, history and context about what we were going to be working and doing and the experience. So what they were telling us was that after 5 years, FEMA, when the hurricane first occurred, FEMA had provided trailers for people to live in. And at the five-year mark, FEMA was then pulling those trailers out of there. And many people did not have the wherewithal to rebuild and replace their family home within that 5 years. So they were looking at an increase of people that would be considered homeless as FEMA pulls out the trailers that they had provided. And so that was a new perspective for us to think about that. And we also got to help do some work on a house that they were rebuilding. So our job, we went into a home that had been restructured and had the 2x4s, the outline, and the outside walls were there. But on the inside, we were waterproofing the beams and to prevent mold. Because in Louisiana, it's fairly humid on a normal basis, let alone after a hurricane and a lot of rain and things like that. So we were doing that, and that was an amazing opportunity. And then after we had done some work for about 3 hours, we actually went over to a house that had just been completed, and the family had just been given the keys to move in. So we got to meet the family and hear from them directly what it meant for them to be back in their home and to have the support of a place like St. Bernard's Project, as well as the many volunteers that had come to New Orleans and the Gulf Coast to help them rebuild. Very meaningful, very meaningful. I learned so much. It was just an impactful event. And I want to tell you that there is, in Katrina, you know, all the services shut down in Louisiana and Mississippi and maybe some in Alabama as well, along the Gulf Coast. Everything was shut down. So that meant they didn't have any shelters. And they were housing people in their Coliseum, right, for their football teams and baseball teams. And what happens during a case like that, whether you're in a huge area that's not really meant to house people, was there was all sorts of violence being committed, robberies, sexual violence, rape was all occurring. And there was little ways to police that or to enforce the safety, because they were in such a traumatic experience. So when you have many people living communally in an area that's not designed for it, number one problem was the bathrooms, right? They didn't have water to flush toilets and, you know, all the things that we somewhat take for granted, such as toilet paper. Those types of things, and you get people that are emotionally and spiritually and physically harmed by a natural disaster. They come together and live, and many of them lost family members, you know, to death. Many of them lost people because they got lost in the chaos that was the result of that climate. And then immediately they started offering people from the affected areas a chance to relocate and would send them to other states and other locations. And that's a, you know, that's another huge impact on people. If you want to talk about the biggest stressors on people in normal situations, it's income, and it's moving, and it's death of a loved one. So here you are, you're in the middle of all this, and it's quite devastating. So Annie Gebhardt has shared us a link, and it is www.nsvrc.org and then /projects/151/preventing sexual violence disasters. And I'm actually going to take that website and I'm going to put it on our Facebook page. And you will be able to find it there if you would like to. And I will also post some of these other resources that I've shared with you on our Facebook page. And thank you, Ms. Gebhardt, for sharing that. That's an excellent resource. It is now on our Three Divas page, Facebook. You can find us there by typing in the number 3, DVASLLC, and that's our Facebook presence. And I have now posted up that resource. So thank you very much. That was very generous of you. Because we have to think about how to respond not only to the immediate basic needs, emergencies, but also the compounding factors that happen in divorces, in natural disasters. So I think that's an excellent resource. Thank you so much. That was really great of you to share that with us. So I shared the resource. Thank you, Anne. That was really wonderful. I appreciate it. And thank you for listening in. So what else would we want to talk about as far as being prepared? Do you know what an emergency kit looks like? Do you know where you can get that information? That would be a good thing for you to think out and have ahead. There on the FEMA.gov community's website, you can join the listserv and you can be part of the daily conversation that's going on. And like I say, I think knowing ahead of time and being prepared before is the best option if we can think about doing that. So do you know what it is to build an emergency kit? What does that include? You know, that is, the list is right there. A basic disaster supplies kit, water, 1 gallon of water per person per day for at least 3 days. Food, 3 days supply of non-perishable food. Battery-powered or hand-crank radio, flashlight, extra batteries, a first aid kit, a whistle to signal for help, some of those masks, a dust mask to help filter contaminated air and those types of things, moist towelettes, garbage bags, plastic ties for personal sanitation. Ah, this is something I didn't think about, wrench or pliers to turn off utilities. And in this world of reliance on electricity, how many of us at home have a manual can opener? That's an important thing to have if you're going to have canned foods, to rely on so you don't go hungry. So think about that. I would probably say that my adult children might not have a manual can opener in their homes. They may or may not. Might just be relying on the electric versions. And a local map, what about for your cell phone? Most of us don't have landlines anymore. Some of us do. And so the good thing about cell phones is that the towers are up. But if the towers are not blown down by a storm are impacted by the natural disaster, then its chances are you're going to have your cell phone. So think about charging an inverter or a solar charger. Think about that. So also things to think about would be a prescription medication and glasses. If you have an infant, what about formula and diapers? What about if you have a pet food and extra water for your pet? Cash or traveler's checks and change. Your important family documents. If those get lost, that's going to slow down your process for recovery. You can be sure of that. A first aid book or sleeping bags, warm blanket. If you live in cold weather, you might want to consider additional. Complete change of clothing, such as a long sleeve shirt, long pants, and sturdy shoes. Household chlorine bleach and a medicine dropper. When diluted, 9 parts of water to 1 part bleach. Bleach can be used as a disinfectant. Or in an emergency, you can use it to treat water by using 16 drops of regular household liquid bleach per gallon of water. Do not use the scented or color safe or bleaches with added cleaners. Do you have a fire extinguisher? What about matches in some sort of waterproof container? We all might have matches, but have we waterproofed it? Feminine supplies and personal hygiene items. Mess kits, utensils we need to eat, paper and pencil to write with, games or other activities for children. So that is actually a lot of things to think about, and that's not even talking about specific first aid needs or supplies for unique needs, such as for a baby, formula, diapers, bottles, powdered milk, diaper rash ointment, for adults. Denture needs, contact and lens needs, extra eyeglasses, to think ahead and be prepared is a serious business. And so those are some, really unique things that we need to think about. And do you know in your own community where you would go for that? Do you actually know where you would, if you had to leave your house, where would you go as an individual or as a family? I'm telling you, it's going to be a lot easier for you to have thought about that beforehand than waiting till it actually happens. And it's not fun to talk about, and it's not easy to think about. So we need to be talking about preparedness, and I think you can all do that. I appreciate you all listening and chatting. I've had to, my other diva friends are not with me today, so thank you for your patience with me, and again, if you wanted to call in, that would be appreciated. Everybody but Opie. No thanks, Opie. I'd like to chat with you and see if you had any thoughts on this issue. And the next time we talk about it, we will definitely have Miss Elaine Anderson on the show with us. And she is pretty brilliant, and she will be able to answer a lot of our questions and help a lot with our connection to violence against women. Now, see, I know a lot about violence against women, and my idea is that violence against women in a natural disaster is going to be amplified greatly. It's just going to be increased risk and increased incidences. And so how does the community prepare for that? Women and children are vulnerable in normal circumstances. If you look at a hierarchy in our society, men are on top, and then women, and then children. And often women and children are seen as less important or as property of the male in the family. And so, therefore, not as important, not to be so concerned about, if the man. And often if you have single parent families, there's the additional burden. You don't have a partner to even have your own sense of support in going through this, and you have to be the strong one for your children and help. You have to learn ways to talk about it and to be a support. And I know that in the aftermath that everybody directly impacted by a natural disaster would benefit from some sort of community, whether it be a support group type of format or forums or, you know, chats, places where people can feel safe to talk about how they are personally affected. And adults are impacted in ways that children are not, and children have their own set of needs specifically related around natural disasters. And, you know, forms of PTSD often occur when anybody has been exposed to any type of violence, and that includes natural disasters. Anything that takes away your ability to meet your basic needs, in my opinion, is a form of violence. So you want to think about that. So there's so much to know about this topic, and I would love to carry this on farther, and I would like to do that with the help of my my co-divas, and they weren't able to make it today. So normally we wrap up our show, and I end the show with a quote. And in the beginning, you may or may not remember, but I talked about how our dialogues between the three divas had enlightened and educated me and made me feel ready to face different things out in the world. So my quote today is, I think, related to that. The quote is, "The beautiful thing about learning is that nobody can take it away from you." And I think that is the truth. And that quote was supplied to us by B.B. King. You may recognize his name. He's an artist and a musician, guitarist, and a blues player of world renown. And he is the one who gave us that lovely quote. "The beautiful thing about learning is that nobody can take it away from you." I want to thank you so much for listening in today. And I want you to please look forward to more discussion on this topic. And I hope you will join us next week as we continue our show. And I just want to let you know that we are indeed three divas, three women, three ways. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.